Blog Talk Radio.
All right, good morning. Good, what day of week is it? It's
Tuesday.
It's all day long. All day long. Of course, to some people that might be
some people that
broadcast. All right, we got the echo again. It's Wednesday already. Okay, Robin, you hear that echo? Okay, she's okay.
I muted my mic. Okay. I'm going to mute my mic and tell me if it goes away.
Okay.
It's Wednesday.
All right, I'm getting still.
All right, I'm getting.
I'm hearing
myself.
I'm hearing myself talk.
Let me do one more thing. I keep meaning to sound check so that we can eliminate this project. I'm going to mute my mic one more time and see if it's still echoing, okay?
No echo. No, it went away. Good. It went away. All right, good morning. It's my house time. And for people listening to this broadcast for the first time, It's My House covers about five primary core areas. If you would like to see the mission of It's My House, which is essentially about private property rights literacy. That's our goal, to basically educate people on their private property rights issues. Now, we're primarily speaking about real estate, in the German language, Immobilien. I'm learning a couple other languages. I learned how to say real estate in those two other languages by the end of the week. However, in the vision statement, and you can go to our website, go to itsmyhousetv.com, itsmyhousetv.com, or itsmyhouse.org, and you can read the mission statement as well as the vision statement. We talk about private property rights literacy, real estate-based, house-jacking literacy, renewable energy literacy. We teach people how to build their. We teach the homeless how to build their own home, and we teach about appropriate technology homes, because that's what we help the homeless build, appropriate technology homes. So once again, and there's a gang of videos on there that primarily deal with private property rights literacy on itsmyhousetv.com or itsmyhouse.org. And you can see those videos on that. Plus, there's a documentary on there about gentrification, which is a private property rights issue, major one in certain urban cities globally. And there's a movie on there titled Pacific Heights. So if you're a homeowner, and particularly if you're a landlord, you definitely have to watch that movie, which is based on actual events, Pacific Heights. So all that's on the website that I recommend, and there's two ways to get there. itsmyhouse.org, O-R-G, or itsmyhousetv.com. Now, today's topic, and we mix it up. We touch on those topics, so if you go through the Blog Talk Radio archives of our show here on It's My House, we hit a lot of areas that are very fundamental. So this month of January, we're covering fundamentals, as well as next month, we're going a little bit deeper into the fundamentals of private property rights and our five core literacies, and then we... The year progresses, we hit it. Now, if you have any questions or comments, if you want to participate in this broadcast, it's 619-768-2945. That's 619-768-2945. Call that number if you would like to participate into the program, or, you know, you can just listen in. Today, our topic is dealing with social wealth and what do you have in common? Prophets that have come before us, such as Jesus Christ, Muhammad, founder of Islam, Buddha, Confucius, and of course you have many other prophets out there, Moses. So what do you have in common with the prophets, the great prophets, as well as Bill Gates? What do you have in common with those people? And you actually do have something in common with them. All right. This broadcast is for everyone, particularly if you're a homeless person of sound mind, could be the working homeless. You could be having some type of personal finance situations, but that's our program for the day. What do the great prophets, Bill Gates, and you all have in common? And that's essentially social wealth, okay? And we're going to talk about how important it is to recognize your social wealth, because a lot of people don't realize that they have social wealth. How you can develop it, in some cases create it, and develop it and leverage it. Okay. And we're going to, this year, we're going to organize a series of five fundamental life skills camps for people of all ages, because there's certain life skills, people that might be homeless, people that might live in a McMansion but are in the process of losing it to foreclosure, or they've lost it to foreclosure, maybe your car has been repossessed, you're living from paycheck to paycheck, you might have a PhD in rocket science, but you're unemployed. The life skills camps are based on philosophy. We believe, particularly in Western culture, that in schools, which they teach academics, and if you don't know what the word academic word means, as a matter of fact, you think you might know, but I suggest that you go to your local dictionary and look up the word academic. Do that. You'll be doing yourself a big favor. And life skills basically teaches you what they do not teach you in our schools and universities. So we have five basic curricula we cover: writing code, how to build your own house. 3, we have a life skills camp coming up on how to grow your own food, which is basically how to feed yourself. Life skill camp number 4, environmental assets. And what we're talking about for the bulk of this broadcast today is social wealth. The basis on how successful you are in the core curricula that we just talked about, as well as anything that you might be involved with right now, no matter where you are in the world, no matter what your financial situation is right now, the fundamental building block life camp that we have is social wealth. And Robin, if you're listening, let's see. Well, let me try this. Oh, Robin, you're
I'm
there.
Here.
Okay. great. Oh,
did
no echo.
Go
great.
I heard the echo in the way.
No, no. Yeah, I don't hear anything. Good, we're good.
Okay, good. Thank
could you, matter of fact, you inspired this broadcast for today because the broadcast that I did have planned for today, I'm moving that to next month. But social wealth.
Okay.
So could you,
yeah,
could you define the term social wealth, because that's going to be one of our life skills camps, and give an example. But give the example that you gave yesterday.
Oh, goodness, I'll do my best. Social wealth, you have to regard people as currency. We've been talking about this, and I've been saying we need to make people like we make money, you know?
Right.
And if I remember correctly, I think we were talking about Bill Gates, how he started out. He was homeless, basically living in his father's garage, and he needed the money to start up, and he didn't have it. His father actually refused him, and he went with his and got his friends, and his friends they all chipped in, and so where they wouldn't have had $1,000 or $10,000 on their own to start up, they chipped in and got together, and so. Amongst that, if you regard people and their skill sets and their assets are actually currency, and you can trade them, I guess. I hope I'm answering your question.
Yeah, you are. And I'm taking notes while you're speaking.
Oh, my goodness. I'm waiting for your coffee to kick in, too. Kick in for me.
Okay, well... I'm fine. Well, that was, I asked for a definition, you gave it, and
mm-hmm.
Wait a minute, I'm taking notes on while you're speaking, too. We're going to turn this into a book.
Basically, you know, we go through life, and we have to make it, and we're conditioned, and we're taught to chase that almighty dollar bill. And
right.
there's actually very little value in the currency of our dollar bills these days, and for a long time, actually, ever since they stopped backing it with the gold. I don't know if everybody knows, but every United States dollar used to be backed up by gold bullion in the reserves over there. And they stopped that. I forget which president did that. Fort Knox.
Yep.
There you go.
You're right. You're right.
But people, let's say you get in a jam and you need $1,000. Mm-hmm. And you go ask anybody for $1,000. And you know the responses that you'll get. You know, you might even get bleeped out from somebody by the audacity. But if you were to go, and instead of going, hey, you know what, I need $1,000, but if you were to sit in amongst your people, your social network, and this is where you'll begin to see the wealth, you know, if you were to sit before them and go and tell them about your circumstances, oh man, my hot water heater broke, the house is all flooded, they're coming in to repair it, you know, and we got a brand new baby in the house, so we can't stay in here, it's all moldy and yucky and stinky, and you might tell somebody that, and you might go, well, I need to stay in a hotel. You know, I had to get back and forth to work. You know, my car's on the blink, anything. If you were to ask for money, let's say it was going to cost you $1,000 to cover all of that. If you were to ask somebody for some money, they'd probably tell you no. But if you told them your circumstances, you might get a response like, well, hey, you know, you guys can come stay over here. Or here, use my car. Okay? And then... Now that person, instead of reaching in their pocket and giving you $1,000, They've actually reached in their heart and given you not only the value of what you need, but more than that, and that can't be measured in dollars. You
right.
have your safety.
Right.
You have your peace. I don't even know. It can just transcend on and on and on.
It does. It does.
Mm. Yeah.
It does that. All right. Good definition and good example and philosophy behind it. Because I always take notes when you're speaking.
Oh, my goodness.
But you're right. Skill sets, yours or
mm-hmm.
other people, because there's a ton of people out here that don't have your skill sets. So your skill sets as well as other people's skill sets are assets.
Yes.
And
yes.
they are currency as well.
And leverage them. Put them all together. Leverage them.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Now. That ties into, because he gave an example of Bill Gates, and now basically the example that you gave with Bill Gates, and that's why I titled this program
mm-hmm.
Social Wealth, the Profits, what do the Profits, Bill Gates, and you have in common? Well, just gave an example of Bill Gates, who did not have the cash,
mm-hmm.
but he had the social wealth. And
mm-hmm.
he knew something about computer programming, and he had
mm-hmm.
other people that had different types of skill sets, which are assets, and currency, where they pooled their resources together, and they basically took nothing and made it into something.
Mm-hmm.
I had to read up on the concept of bricks to straw. Make bricks out of straw. I have to read up on it later to refresh my memory on that. But now, and that's why I brought up the prophets, because Jesus, when he started out, it was just him and a vision.
Yes.
And he didn't have all 12 disciples now. On day
mm-hmm.
one, you know, if you read through the scriptures, I don't know who's the first one that he met, but he set out and he met one and developed a relationship with that person. And then, you know, a little while later, you know, he met another person and they became a disciple. So he built up to 12 disciples.
Mm-hmm.
And then, now, if Jesus had been, pardon my language, had been an asshole, okay, not a
normal
person, we never would have heard
antisocial. Antisocial.
Yeah, that's a better word. Okay. Had he been antisocial,
yes.
all right, we wouldn't be, you know, millions of people around the globe. And this isn't a show, people are listening before you turn off the radio. This is not a show about religion. We're talking about social wealth. I'm going to give you the Islamic people and the others, I'm going to give those examples to you in a minute. So if Jesus Christ had been antisocial, if you need a miracle in your life,
mm-hmm.
start being sociable. Okay?
Yes.
Start being sociable. So.
Yeah. Yep.
He didn't have all 12 in one time. So he, step by step, as you said, Robin, he made people like you make money.
Yes.
All right. Now, when he got to 12, now, because let's look at the miracles in the Gospels here. And like I say, I'm going to give other examples with other religions because it's just easy to do. There's some people, when you mention Jesus, they get turned off. That's fine. I'll give you the Jewish answer, the Islamic answer, the Buddhist, because it's all the same, it's just the names change. All right, so if you notice, when he turned, or given credit for turning water into wine, there were other people in the room. He didn't do that by himself. He had a social network, he had the social wealth. That's how that miracle happened. when people were killed, there were other people involved, and that's social wealth in action. When he fed 5,000 people, okay, obviously, if he was like the little boy with the loaves and bread, okay.
Yeah,
I mean loaves and fish, okay.
Yeah.
He didn't go over and try to jack the little boy for the food, because in that case nobody would have got fed except for maybe one person who jacked it. He didn't do that. Obviously, he had a good working relationship with the 12 disciples. So due to the fact that him, the 12 disciples, and the little kid, all right, with the loaves and fish, they were not antisocial, because the little boy could have said, I'm not sharing. Could have been antisocial. So for people that are listening to this broadcast, if you're looking for a miracle, or you just might want to start a business, or you might, maybe your car is getting repossessed. You're losing your home. The first step is have to activate. First thing, that's an indicator your social bank account is kind of in the minus. Or you haven't put enough deposits in there to leverage yourself to solve these financial needs. So that's where we're going to have a social wealth camp. Now, for the people that are, that don't like the word name, Jesus, whatever, the Prophet Muhammad, founder of the Islamic religion. Same principle. His first disciple was his wife, Khadija, and who was a wealthy merchant. And you don't get wealthy by being, in this case, nasty, antisocial. So,
and you don't get wealthy just by acquiring money, and you won't get wealthy. You're not socially wealthy. All right.
Exactly. And the same with Buddha. You can read up on him. Confucius. You can read up on him as well. But they exercise. So that's the first step. So and everybody starts with one. Like I said, Jesus didn't start off with 12. Muhammad didn't start off with 12 or 2 or whatever. It was them individually. So a very fundamental principle of social wealth is you cannot be, it is not healthy to be antisocial. All right. Now, I would call that your first skill, being sociable.
Mm-hmm.
That's a skill set, but a lot of people don't look at it that way, and they think they can bully people. They bully people, have antisocial behavior, trying to get a dollar or some type of currency, a pound, a peso, a euro, what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And typically when you try to gangster it that way, bully it that way, essentially, karmically speaking, it'll do you no good. You're going to end up losing it, which is an example of when Judas Iscariot, 30 pieces of silver, Robin? Or whatever it was.
Shekel.
Okay. And then he ended up killing himself. So, and it's interesting. One out of the 12 put his faith in the money, the government-issued currency.
Yeah.
And he forgot about the people currency that he had. So, and the access of that social currency, because he was there among the 5,000, and he realized that little bit of chump change, pittance, wasn't where he had blown his social wealth.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if you calculate it, we'll do that on another show. Was worth a lot. So that's what a very important social camp to teach. So let's review quickly again. And Sylvia's back. Oh, let me bring her in. Okay, Bliss, are you there?
I'm here.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
All right, great. Yeah.
Hello.
Now, yeah, I can hear you. But we can hear
you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
Now, we've been talking about social wealth. Now, just to give you an update, Sylvia, on last week, we, on one of our shows, we were talking about from social workers to, social workers and new slave masters. We had a brainstorm with the concept now that which we call life skill camps, and we're going to have 5 life skills that we'll be teaching people: writing code, how to build your own house, primarily directed towards homeless, but anybody can participate, environmental assets, and social wealth. Now, today we've been talking about social wealth, but and we're going to tie it in with what I'm about to ask you. Like I said, one of the camps is going to be on how to grow your own food. So you grow your own food, so which helps you. I mean, whatever you grow, obviously you do not have to go to the grocery store and buy. So could you explain to us, if a person wanted to start their own garden, tabletop, and then work up to what you have, because I've seen pictures of what you have, what can a person do not knowing anything about growing anything, not knowing anything about dirt? Give us some information on that, please. And, oh, by the way, for people listening, part of Sylvia's social capital. Sylvia and her currency, she knows how to grow her own food and how to make her own, to make dirt. And a lot of people might, it's going to probably take some people to grasp the concept of making dirt, how valuable that is. But these are some of her, this is some of her skill sets, which are her assets and currency. So back to you, Sylvia. Get us educated here.
Okay, first of all, you need a spot if you're going to be making your own dirt. You need a spot to where you can just gather all of your yard clippings, leaves, grass, weeds. You can even, you know, turn the weeds into the dirt. But first of all, you have to let your weeds dry out completely if you're going to use weeds along with everything else, because you don't want the seeds of the weeds to germinate in the dirt that you're making. So what you do is you just take all your yard clippings and rake them up into a pile. You could either pile it if you don't have a container to put it in, or if you have a composting container, you could put it in that. Or if you don't have one but have the materials to possibly build one, you could just build a 3-4 layer box, okay, maybe 4 or 5 inches tall each box, in a circumference of however big you want it to be, and just build like 3 or 4 layers, separate layers, and pile them up together, stack them up, and you just put your clippings in it, and you layer it with newspaper or something, any kind of paper, except for colored ink. I don't know if you want to use that. You just layer it with paper, then you take your clipping, put it in there, and your food scraps, put it in your container or in your pile, and you just keep building it and tossing it, turning it, turning it, and turning it, and gradually it turns into dirt. It doesn't take but maybe a couple of weeks to turn it into dirt if you keep working it often. So that's one way of making your own dirt.
Now, by doing that, that means we don't have to go to a big box store like Lowe's or Home Depot or the local hardware store to buy topsoil. Am I correct?
Correct. Although your dirt you're creating does not always have the nutrients, all of the nutrients that you need in your dirt. You need like some nitrogen, and I'm not real familiar with everything yet, but you also need possible manure if you could get it. You want to throw some additives to help put nutrients into your dirt so your plants grow much better.
So
you may have
manure?
To purchase a little bit if you're not accessible to getting those items.
Okay, all right. All right, now
then you
the
just
step?
Take the seeds. Next step is taking some seeds and putting them in like a little pot of dirt. You can put this in your house until they grow strong enough to put it into your, per se, box garden, or if you have planters, or you could even just possibly put it into the ground. But I like boxing my garden better because it raises the bed up, and it allows you a lot more soil that you make and create to put into it. So it raises it up, gives you better dirt, or more room for better dirt to put into it. So
okay.
Once your seed has germinated and grown big enough and strong enough, you can then turn them into your outdoor garden. Because if you start the seeds in the ground, you have a chance of losing them because of the bugs and the weather.
Now, what
and you know how the weather is lately.
Yeah, well, it's rough in the northeastern part of the country, cold.
Yeah.
Real cold there. Now, what if a person, they wanted to start off small, let's say with a tabletop garden that they might have inside an apartment or within their home, but, you know, they start off with a tabletop garden. Any information? Same process?
Same process.
The
only thing is, I wouldn't. I'm sorry.
And what's a good starter plant or plants? Vegetable. The start. If you're going to grow inside, to start
in the house on the table. Well, I would suggest tomatoes would be a good one. You can keep it to a certain size. When you're using pots, per se, your vegetables won't grow as wild and crazy because your root system isn't going to grow wild. The bigger your root system, the bigger your plant's going to be. So if you have a good-sized pot that you can put them in, you can maintain the size, trim them back to the size that you want them. I wouldn't suggest growing anything that's going to grow on a vine, like a watermelon or squash or anything like that, unless you could, like, put it on a trellis and let it grow up. That would be possible. But you don't want anything that's going to, like, grow crazy all over your apartment, like I said, per se, squash and whatnot. Corn wouldn't work in the house. You want to grow, like, herbs and things that aren't going to just really go crazy all over the place. Tomatoes would be a good start to try, and some window herbs or something.
Oh, window herbs. What are some, names of you, because I'm green on this, no pun intended.
Cilantro, thyme, mint. Well, mint goes really crazy, though. Carrie, give me some more herbs to throw out there. Curry.
Sage.
You know, just your regular seasonings that you have on your shelf that you purchase for a lot of money. Parsley. Stuff like that. Basil.
You're right. There's some of that
but
stuff
that's
you name.
Really,
that's not a
those
really
those aren't work. Really items. Fill your belly, though. Those are to season your food with. But still, it's a good start to, you know, practice and work with.
All right. Now, greenhouse. For those who are really interested in staying away from the grocery store, at least for fruits and vegetables, what's the purpose of the greenhouse, particularly if you're in a colder climate?
Well, a greenhouse is definitely a great thing to have if you can either build one or purchase one to build, put together as a kit. Anyhow, the purpose of a greenhouse is it keeps your vegetables. You can grow them all year long when you have a greenhouse because you've got temperature control. Your plants are going to stay warm and not freeze over during the winter. So, and they're not going to get attacked by bugs so much per se. You can control, you know, not having to use any pesticides. I don't like using pesticides at all on my garden because I like mine to be all organic.
So when we have your garden, everything's organic. In other words, we don't have to go to Whole Foods. I mean, you don't have to go to Whole Foods. You grow your own.
Yes, I take a potato from the house and I'll throw it in the garden. You just take a regular potato, let it get some eyes on it. You know when it starts to grow the little root things. You take that potato and you cut it in half and you throw it in the dirt and then it just starts mass producing. So you could just take a regular potato or garlic or even onion. I think onion you could do too that way. And throw it in the dirt, and there's your seeds. You don't even have to purchase seeds for it.
Man, okay, so...
Carrots, too. I believe carrots, too, also do that.
Now, share with us... your garden, what are some of the things you grow?
Well, I have grown definitely tomatoes. The springtime before last, I had like 4 plants. And from mass producing my dirt this last spring, I had probably 50, 60 plants that came back. I didn't even have to plant any seeds for tomatoes. The potatoes I took and I cut them up and I threw them out in the garden, mass-produced potatoes. I took garlic, threw that in the ground. Now I have a mass production of garlic. I love growing cucumbers for pickling or cucumber salad. Let's see, I have artichoke. And I'm gonna do a lot more. Oh, I had a lot of pumpkins and a lot of squash. And those come back every year. So, you know, if you can plant it in the ground and do your dirt thing, then you will definitely always have those. I had watermelon, cantaloupe.
Man.
What else? Green beans.
Uh-huh.
Snow peas.
Give me an estimate on just a ballpark, a wild guess, of how much you think you're saving by growing those items. Because I know you don't grow everything you eat, but you sure do grow a lot. So what's the ballpark figure?
I would say couple hundred dollars at least, if not more.
All right.
I even handed out to the neighbors. I had so much. I started handing out to the neighbors, even the fire department over here I handed out to.
All right,
but
so
I have
your
the
buildings.
Space for that.
Okay. Well, by giving it away, you're also, as we started out this program, you're also building your social capital as well. Now, you mentioned you mentioned, and we've done a number of shows now, you would like to teach kids how to, question A is, why would you want to teach them how to plant? I'm not sure to phrase that differently, but I can't think straight. Anyway, but it's a good idea. Your purpose in training them, and then how would you go about doing it? Because, like I said, we have a life skills camp coming up, which we're going to ask you to help us organize that. So anyway, go through a person that, you know, that might want to attend this or send their kids to attend your life skills camp on growing your own food. What kind of activities would those kids indulge in?
Well,
I mean, some of it's obvious.
Well,
what got me started wanting children
is because I'm surrounded by children. They sit on my fence when I'm out there gardening, and they talk to me, and some of them were being pretty, they would vandalize and take things from me. So I started to get a bond with them. So they would be my friends, and they would look out for me. And I thought, you know, they need to learn how to grow their own food, because our world today is just way, it's too expensive. And it's full of foods that are have a lot of pesticides and whatnot. It's not good for us. So I thought maybe I could get the children involved so they can learn something productive, which would be good for their future and good for their bodies, them something other than to go around and vandalize and be little hoodlums. So I got them involved in some of the things that I do, and now they're my friends. But I really would like for them to know how to take care of themselves when they are less fortunate and don't have the funds to go out and eat. If they knew how to use their time, use their hands, use their minds to grow their own food, I think they would be more prone to doing the right things for themselves.
Right.
And what I would do is I would open my backyard up and have so many children per day, maybe like do a camp, summer camp, or what have you, and just open my gates to allowing them in, teach them how to make their own dirt, so they could go home and make a compost pile and a garden area. Or even just, I even thought maybe a community garden back there, you know. But let the children come in and run them through the process of how to make their own dirt, how to plant the seeds, and how to water them and feed the plants and grow the plants. So that way they can, at their own house, grow their own food, and utilize their time and their mind.
Excellent idea. Matter of fact, I was watching a documentary a couple of nights ago on Netflix. I think it's titled G-Dog. And it's about a guy, or a priest or something like that, in Los Angeles, California. He organized a thing called Homeboy Industries. And essentially, he's taking people who are ex-convicts, is heavily ex-convicts, people on probation, parole, out of prison, jail. And he created one part of it, they have a restaurant. And he has several things connected to, you know, Homeboy Industries. But I don't think they've covered the growing your food aspect. That's what I really like about your what you want to do here, is teach kids how to do it, because what you did in the process of being sociable yourself, with the kids, you built up that social capital and security, because if kids feel that they own part of that garden, they're going to protect it from people that might want to destroy it or pick off goods or what have you. So that's and I really like that community garden concept. So you're right. And a lot of people, you know, particularly for somebody that might come out of prison or what have you, or they could be runaways for whatever reason, and like I say, they don't have any money to eat. Well, basically, if they have this life skill that you're offering to them on how to grow their own food, or if they're new to an area and they're short on funds, then they can go seek out a local community garden, or start one. So, as a matter of fact, let me write that down. We're going to ask you to teach them how to start their own community garden. Matter of fact, could you give us an example, Sylvia, of, let's say, a person waltzed into, let me pick a city. Phoenix, Arizona. They don't have much money. They don't know anybody in town. But their particular skill set is they know how to grow food. That you taught them to do, but yet they want to start a community garden so they can basically extinguish all their food needs for the most part. Let's say the person's a vegetarian. So what would you recommend? How would I go about starting a community garden?
Well, first of all, you would have to definitely find somebody who's willing to give you a spot that is open for the community to get involved. So I would suggest maybe, I don't know, I've never done this, but go into maybe the city council meetings and bring it to the attention of the community, and hopefully they might bite on it, and somebody would donate a spot where you could start this project. I really haven't conquered.
Way.
Yeah. Maybe
yeah,
even
well,
posting things.
That's bureaucratic. Maybe what now?
I'm thinking maybe post, you know, little notes here and there in laundromats, because you might find somebody that might go in there and read it, or the park and recreations department of your city. I haven't really
okay, those are good ideas. They're good ideas. The city council part, and that, well, this, you know what? That's a doable idea. I'm thinking of bureaucratic because the government moves slow. But I like the idea of posting notes and maybe a laundromat, places like that, because I think you're going more direct. Because like you said, the very first step, whether you do it individually or on a larger level of community-wise, you've got to find a spot. So it seems like it might be easier to laundromats and, oh, since we're in the age
library.
Of the internet, the public library and the schools and online. Place an ad
colleges
on
online.
Facebook. Yeah, colleges, Facebook, all your social media. So, all right. So basically, get a plan together on who you would. I mean, approach somebody for, I'd say, a partner, a possible partnership. They've got a spot. And, oh, and by the way, now what? I know you haven't done it yet. This what I'm talking about, the community garden. But I love this concept. It's how big of a space would you say is needed to start a community garden? Now, let's say I'm on where I'm at right here in Florida. It's a little bit over a quarter acre. And we've got maybe 14, 15 citrus fruit trees, you know, different types of grapefruits, lemons, limes, oranges, that type of thing, and a little vegetable garden. It's only got two plants in it. Well, four plants with two things we're growing. So now, and of course, the house sits on this as well. So would a quarter acre be big enough or you don't need as much for community garden or you need more? As far as
well,
space.
I would suggest maybe starting off with a quarter acre. And if it grows
right.
bigger, hopefully you have more room. But to start it off, I wouldn't start it off tremendously huge. Because you want to make sure that it's going to work for you. A quarter
or,
acre, I think, would be.
What about this? What if you had, let's say, not a quarter of an acre for a community garden, but what if you had a spot where you can put a greenhouse, you know, would that do? I mean, an indoor community garden. The indoors is the greenhouse.
That would be great.
What about that concept? All right, I'm home.
That way it would be all year round you could be growing. I think a greenhouse would be a perfect idea. Plus, you wouldn't have a lot of looters, people coming in and robbing of your community garden that way. You can lock it up and not have to worry about somebody just coming in and taking everything.
All right. I'm taking notes as we speak. Okay. That's what I like about these programs. But actually, the ideas are due. I just thought about getting the show on the air. Now the ideas are coming from people like you. Okay. An indoor community garden, which is the greenhouse. All right, let's call that the spot. So with that concept, does it, I mean, you just mentioned a bunch of places that are all potential, as well as, because there are faith-based organizations that can do it. There's a whole lot of ways you can do it. Like I said, you gave examples of basically getting circulation online and offline to start a community garden. Now, what about people that start either a personal garden or an indoor community garden? The excess, what can people do with the excess? Now, you give yours away to, you know, people in your immediate surroundings, which is great for social capital, right in your immediate surroundings. But what if a person with their excess to sell some of what they grew? I mean, 'cause they can't eat all of it. So what would you suggest, if they want to sell some of their produce, what do you think they should do? What's to make money with it? Like they got a gang of tomatoes, so they don't need any more tomatoes. So where can they go to sell those, the excess tomatoes? You there, Sylvia? Oh, I think she dropped off. Oh, excuse me. Okay, she dropped off, but she'll be back. And was it Rob, you there?
I'm here.
All right, great. Yeah. Sylvia's call dropped. I guess she'll call back in. Yeah, Sylvia gave us some good examples as you've been listening on how she basically has built her social wealth by using her skill set of gardening.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, which, I mean, with the fire room people, the fire engine guys, the kids that were hanging out. So her social wealth morphed into protection of her homestead there, mm-hmm. as well as, I guess she's planning, like you said, she's making people, and which is a powerful currency. And I like the idea of the indoor community garden, which would be a, you can do it with a, what do you call it? a greenhouse. So, mm-hmm. And for the working homeless, I think that'll be an excellent idea.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, I'm thinking about all these ideas coming with you guys. You know what? I'm putting in my notes. I'm sneaking that out. Build a pimped out greenhouse. In other words, a greenhouse. And not only do you grow food, but it'll have a living area where people can
mm-hmm.
sleep and a lounge area where people just, you know, a coffee house. All right, pimped out greenhouse. Sleeping quarters. Sleeping quarters, reading room / chill spot, and coffee house. Which all right. That just popped in my head.
Mm-hmm.
So that way you're growing food all year round, and just imagine a Starbucks that you go to another part of it, they're growing food,
mm-hmm.
And for people that might be traveling or whatever, that might be a small sleeping, I don't know how that's going to work, but anyway, but without the sleeping quarters, you at least got a chill spot.
Mm-hmm.
Chill spot / reading room and coffee house. Anyway, that's, you know, that's a project. That's what it is. Matter of fact, I'm basically putting this in red. Okay. All right, innovation.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay, well, thank you, Silvery, for stimulating that type of thought. Pimped out greenhouse. Later on today, I'll get on YouTube or whatever, and I'll get greenhouse ideas, because that's something that people can actually buy.
Mm-hmm.
And, excuse me, build. Build. Okay, so any comment or feedback on, you know, what Sylvia put out to us today so far?
Yeah. As you were asking her, you know, how would you go about doing that, and she began to give the different places where you can go out. The,
right.
We talk about making people like you make money and becoming
right.
socially wealthy. And so the question rose in my mind, how do we do that? What do you mean? And so how you do that, the very simple way that you do that is you open your mouth and you just talk to someone by any means necessary, telephone, in person, whatever. And then you don't look at the people and go, well, I'm not going to discuss this and I'm not going to discuss that. You talk, you socialize, you dialogue. This is how you do it. You connect, you open your mouth, and you begin to speak. And you don't have to necessarily, you really don't even have to necessarily sit and go, who should I talk to or where? Just open your mouth and begin to talk to the first person that you see. And with the dialogue, all the ideas will come. And you and I are a good example of that, okay? You opened your mouth. Are you connected with me? You called, or you sent me a message on Facebook, and from that, here we are, sitting here co-hosting the show together. And you have all these ideas, and that came out of you trying to resolve a very serious issue that you have going with you. You see? And look at the wealth that we're expanding to. Now we're having, like, from a personal issue that you're having, you opened your mouth and you connected with one other person, say me, all right? And from that, the dialogue, all these ideals were born, and you've got resolution not only for your situation, but also growth out of it. Look at what's happening now. Now we're going to go forth and teach other people and empower them. And you have you've increased your social wealth just by opening your mouth and talking to one person. And that's my point. Just open your mouth.
Because we met through the chat room of another radio program here on Blog Talk, Freedom Door Ministries.
Yeah.
And you know what's interesting, listen to what you're saying. Sylvie, we're going to tell you in here in a second or two. Thanks for coming back. When we met, I didn't even have a radio program at that time. And number two, for people that are online right now, or whenever you listen to the show on demand, because most people listen to the show on demand, if you look at the flashcard part of this broadcast, you'll see It's My House baseball hats. There's like three of them there, and different pictures, hoodies, polo shirts. I wasn't even thinking about starting a clothing line.
Mm-hmm.
When we met, wasn't even thinking about it. And now I've got a basic clothing sportswear thing where we're going to expand that to women's apparel here. I might place an order today, but within the next week or two. But I'm tempted to do it today because the colors that I have right now are basically one of my friends, female. She said, no, you got too many neutral colors. Because I got gray, white, and camouflage. So she recommended, and you ladies, you can recommend colors too. I'm about to start a women's line for It's My House, a sporting wear. So whatever colors that you might want to wear with a baseball hat, hoodie, polo shirt, just let me know. The point I'm making is I wasn't even thinking about it. But now, like I said, if you look in the flashcard part of this this broadcast, you'll see, that's wealth that came from social wealth that, this started with me being in the chat room. We just saying hello to each other. Now, Sylvia's back. She's giving us some great ideas. I got inspired to, I'm going to look up, I'm sure there's somebody out here that's pimped out a greenhouse. But, and this all comes, this is a life skills camp going on this broadcast right now.
It sure is.
Let's see. It was a question I wanted to ask you, Sylvia, about, I know where it is. Sylvia, you there? You listening?
Yes, I am.
Hello? Great. Thanks for coming back.
Hello?
Here's the thought I had. Yeah, I can hear you. Here's the thought I had. Now, Robin has been helping me with this broadcast on a daily basis. Robin has five internet radio stations, and she does help a lot of people. I heard one of her broadcasts this past Saturday, and it was just, the chat was popping. I'm not talking about chat room. I'm talking about the conversation where, and like we're talking right now, a bunch of people, which was off the chain, as they said. I'm thinking now, I have to launch the Homeless Radio Network, which, Robin, I'll speak to you about that later today, but I'm just thinking, Sylvie, you need to have a radio program of your own, or we can get you started on this and then expand it. Because you have a lot of information, because this is a life skill that they don't teach, to my knowledge, in most public, private, or schools on a university level. Because what she's basically teaching people is how to feed yourself. So, what do you think about that?
I think they should have it in the school. I would love to do that. But I'm not sure when I mean, how often I could do that because of my new job. I do work a lot of hours now. So I'd have to look into that.
What we could do is have her pre-record it. And like when she's got time, maybe, or even, because she's got hours like me and you do. So we can record her like maybe two, you know, it could be two shows
could
a week
we
or
like
whatever.
Do, like cram 2 to 3 shows in 1 day or 2 days
yes.
on my 2 days off?
We sure can. We sure can.
Yeah, yeah.
We sure can.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll have to get together on that.
Right,
and
what's
the
schedule like today? I'm not talking about recording today. Yeah.
Right. Well, my schedule today is definitely going out into my garden and working on it. I'm turning my dirt and starting to throw it into my garden area to get ready to plant for when the weather is more stable. And I only have 2 days off, so the first day I usually rest because I'm so exhausted. And then this day, my second day, I'm pretty much outside working my garden. Unless I have other things
Robin,
to do, but I'm pretty caught up on everything else.
Okay, Robin, what are logistics to get her based on, let's say not this week, but within the next 2 weeks? What's the logistics on getting Sylvia doing, you know, let's say getting at least 2 to 4 shows in the can for her garden show? What
would
be logistics?
Because,
you know, on Blog Talk,
well,
I only got 3 hours on this a day.
Yeah, on my Spreaker, I've got 5 hours. And then on the radio stations, we can go as long as we want. And then I also, offline, I have the ability to record the shows. It doesn't matter what length. And then we can just upload those to the various, you know, areas. And so it's just basically a matter of us getting together and deciding how long we want it to be, and then we do that, then we just upload them. And then if we want to be live, we have the options of your network, 3 hours, my speaker, 5 hours, and then it's also going to be running on all the stations. So, yeah. Evangelist Mike, I need you to mute your microphone while you're not talking. All right. Evangelist Mike is on the line with us now.
Oh, great. I called you, yesterday a couple of times, but, you know, I guess we were both in and out. So, glad you're on the line. Brother Mike, any input on what you've been hearing this morning? I don't know how long you've been online listening, though.
Not at the present time.
Okay, all right. Matter of fact, let Mike Bradford, Sylvia Campbell or Belina?
Either or.
Oh,
Heavenly Bliss.
All right, yeah. Heavenly Bliss, Mike Bradford. Mike
Hello,
is Webb. He's in Missouri, and Sylvia is in the Bay Area of California. There's the introduction. All right, yeah, so what we'll do is, Sylvia, when you had the time, I'm just following Robin's lead on this. We'll get you in the loop so we can have you on the air with the content part. And then soon here, because I'm not coming out until after the weather breaks, and that's sometime in late March. So, put it this way, going to some of the colder climates, like Detroit, they have long winters. Sometimes it might be April and it's snowing. They might have a snow in Detroit. So I don't know how the weather is. When is real spring come into in your neck of woods, Robin?
August. It starts turning about April, May. And sometimes, we're actually having a very mild winter up here this year. And so but about April, May.
Okay.
It feels like springtime 60. Here right now.
Yeah, see.
Oh,
it's,
Now, today, I'm in Central Florida. It's T-shirt weather out there today, but 2 days ago it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
2 days ago, I was wearing a jacket with a knit hat on when I stepped outside. But, today it's T-shirt and it's beach weather right now in Central Florida. But anyway, right, we've got about 15 minutes left on the broadcast. So now, going back to you, Sylvia. All right, as a review. Oh, speaking of which, you know what? I got some of your pictures. I need to put them up as well. Now, as a review, Sylvia, a person that wants to start their own garden, give us an example of starting your own garden again, as well as, let me ask you this question. Did you learn on your own? How did you learn how to garden? Trial and error, what?
Pretty much on my own. Pretty much on my own, but I would go to the nurseries. The nurseries do have little classes for you to attend. Your neighbor may be knowledgeable. I take any information that I can, anywhere I can get it. So, and, of course, hands-on practicing and, just working it and having the desire to do it, pretty much.
Right.
And then having a big backyard that's full of leaves, that gave me the incentive to make my own dirt.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. I look at yard waste as a whole. I look at yard waste and rotted food, well, particularly a fruit or vegetable, in a whole different light. I used to throw those, put them in the trash bag, throw it in the trash can. Now, I look at yard waste or a rotted banana or apple or what have you. In other words, instead of throwing it away, compost it.
And your paper goods, too.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you a question on that. Let's say a newspaper, because it's got all that ink, so all that breaks down as well?
Yes, you definitely want to throw your newspapers in your compost. It breaks down, and it also helps keep your dirt from getting hard. You don't want your dirt to be hard and clumpy. You want it to be, soft
and manageable.
The ink, though, that's interesting, though. What happens? Are the inks toxic? Do they biodegrade? You know, I'm just wondering.
You know, I've never researched that. I will research that, and we will have an answer on the next show.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, because that would be important to a lot of people. I've never thought about it, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people.
What about those sales circulars that are made out of that shiny paper? Should we put them in or leave them out? You know, because that's
well,
slick
I
paper.
Will definitely find the answer to that all, as well.
Okay.
I don't know. I pretty much throw paper plates in there. I throw newspaper in there. I throw my old bills or what have you in there. That way, you don't have to worry about shredding them. You don't have to worry about throwing them in the garbage for somebody else to get your information. So makes it easier for me to feel better about not putting my information out there for somebody to get and putting it to good use. I pretty much have thrown the newspaper ads with a lot of ink in them in my composting. But I never really even thought about the ink. I thought it's got to biodegrade, but I'm not positive.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, I will do some research on that and have an answer. And then we'll all know.
Puts a whole new spin on what you can do with junk mail.
Yeah, no way. You are what you eat.
Yeah. But the,
I guess I'll be walking around like a walking newspaper. Soon then.
You'll be able to tell us where all the local sales are.
There you go. Or where they were.
Coupons. Don't say nothing if people start clipping you.
Oh, we don't want that. I'm thinking like particularly areas of the world where they have a real fall season, where there's a lot of leaves on the ground, and then every time somebody cuts grass, a lot of times people bag up that grass and throw it away.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially what they're doing, correct me if I'm wrong, either one of you, is throwing away money.
Yeah.
Because you can collect
pretty
you
much
can collect those you can collect that now I know there's something entrepreneurial
again,
here that somebody's doing, but yeah, go ahead.
Again,
so,
you want to treat the grass as you do the weeds. You want to allow it to dry out before you mix it into your compost, or what you're going to be doing is just growing more grass in your compost. So anything that's going to be like a seedling or germinate, you know, if it's going to germinate, then you want to definitely dry it out completely before you throw it into your compost pile, or you'll just be growing more weeds and more grass to pluck and pull out of your garden area.
I've got potatoes coming up in my front yard from when somebody planted something a while ago. So there's potatoes, there's these flowers and stuff that pop up. It's beautiful though.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you definitely want to let your seedling plants dry out completely before you really mix them into your compost. I don't per se do that, and I just go ahead and pull as I'm going along and just recompost it, but it is a lot of work to be doing that. So if you have the patience to let it dry out before you compost it, then I suggest you do that. And, you know, if your neighbor wants to throw their greens away, they can donate them to you.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of having your neighbor have to pay for that to be put into the garbage or the landfills. You know, that would be some suggestion. If you don't have enough in your backyard to make a compost pile big enough for what you want, have your neighbors donate their yard clippings and whatnot.
Yeah, because I'm thinking about, I got a visual right now, and I think everybody's got this visual. It, like the fall of the year where all that yard waste just on leaves alone, and most people throw that away.
Yeah.
Be interesting if you
and
can
pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Or they'll bag it up and let the city come and pick it up. It'll
yeah,
be
but
best
that
probably
usually costs you, don't it? You
get
well,
two free pickups, two free pickups a year like that from the curbside, and then you pay for it. Yeah.
All
mm-hmm.
right.
Yeah. My garbage has dwindled down to very little
mm-hmm.
since I've been composting.
Mm-hmm.
Although I'm being charged for what I'm not even using.
Yeah, because in some places you will get fined if you don't have service and have a can. In some places, you know,
yes,
you don't have the option of opting out. You can't opt out.
Right. That's how it is here, and I don't like it.
Yeah.
Because I don't utilize it. I'm not utilizing all three cans, but I'm having to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
And again,
mm-hmm.
we had to sign up for it and
yeah.
get the service, though we knew we weren't going to be using it,
mm-hmm.
which is a drag.
And the only way to turn the tables on that is essentially you have to talk about social capital, which you can convert that into political capital.
Mm-hmm.
You would have to get other stakeholders, that could be renters and or owners, to basically form an organization and raise some funds to influence your local politics on it. That regulation can be reversed, taken off the books, but the only way to do it is, and I guess we can use this program as well as these life classes, is to teach about basically how rules and regulations become rules and regulations and laws. It's to tell the truth, there's only a minority of people out here that are really politically active, and that they influence the local politicians as well as the state level and federal level. But there's a lot more little people than bigger people. I'll give you a prime example. The lady, I'm going to try to get her on this program. The lady who started MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, I think it was her daughter, got killed by a drunk driver.
Mm-hmm.
And at sentencing, that particular drunk driver got off with a light sentence. I don't know, how much time he got or whatever. However, she was outraged. So what she did was she was mad and started MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving. Now, this one person. Now, I think last year, MAD, which is a nonprofit organization, they had a revenue of like $45 million. But as we all know, MAD has let, through MAD and their local chapters, have put all the a lot of the legislation that's on the books now started by this one person that, like you said, Robin, opened up her mouth.
Yep.
And reached out to other people who had lost a loved one to a drunk driver.
Yeah.
So, social wealth, which last year converted into 45. Now, the $45 million, in other words, The $45 million in revenue that they had as a nonprofit, that goes to basically hiring lobbyists on local levels, state levels, and federal levels to make sure that these drunk driving laws are on the books, modified, or what have you. So the same thing goes with this irritating mandatory bill that pops up on local tax rolls for the sewer charge or whatever they call it. That mm-hmm. that can be reversed. But, and I guess we have to have a show on that. And believe it or not, I think maybe about half the legislation that becomes on the books as law, essentially that comes from just little people. But little people that, as you said, Robin, developed and leveraged their social wealth. So social wealth can be converted into political wealth.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if you know, the Kennedy family,
mm-hmm.
Joseph Kennedy, and his father-in-law, the late Mayor Fitzgerald in Boston. That's how John became president and son attorney general. They basically, they started off in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Just doing things for people in their neighborhood, then, you know, the community, and they leveraged that all the way up to the White House. And they're still influential in their circles. So, we'll go with that. All right, we got about 2 minutes left on the broadcast. Sylvia, any final thoughts for today on how to grow your own food?
I would just like to elaborate on how I'm going to do some research on the ink that I've been throwing into my compost, and I will have an answer next time we meet.
Great. All right. What about you, producer Robin?
No, I'm just really, really fascinated, and I can't wait to find out about that ink. And I'm going to go through, and I'm going to get all my newspapers, and I'm going to go and get all my neighbors' newspapers, and I'm just going to throw them out in the backyard. And I'm not even going to start a bonfire.
All right, great.
Oh, and may I add one more thing, which what you just said made me think of it, Robin. That's one way also to kill your weeds, is to put layers and layers of paper down to like smother your weeds. So that is also one way to control weeds.
Oh, okay. Yeah. There's your life skills teacher right there. There's your life skills teacher right there.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. That's a definite life skills teacher. No doubt about it. Okay, well, we got about 30 seconds, so I'm going to close this out. Thanks, Mike, for calling in, listening in. Thank you for the people that are in the chat room, which we're going to build that up. And thank you, Robin. So anyway, this concludes this edition of It's My House, the Garden Edition. So everybody have a good rest of the day, and we'll see you all tomorrow.